This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Every weekday, we talk with public officials, business and education leaders, nonprofit organizations, and more about the issues of the day as we work hard to help you stay connected with local news and information. Now, here's Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Certainly a lot going on to talk about, and we're covering it. Of course, the Oregon State Legislature in the final few days of the short session. We're back live to Salem. State Representative Virgil Osborne representing District 2, much of Douglas County. Virgil, thanks for being on this afternoon.
Hey, Kyle. Thanks for having me on. How are you?
We are doing all right here in a wet afternoon. I know things have been very busy. A lot of chaos from various vantage points happening. I guess at the top of your list in terms of what's been happening in the last 24 hours or so in Salem, what would you put on the very top?
Well, I think probably the most controversial thing that we've done, you know, this week has been the 1599, the referral, the tax referral bill that we sent to when it was passed by the governor. Sorry, the transportation tax, you know, earlier in the special session was passed, and then we in Oregon we have the right by our constitution to refer a tax increase to the citizens. And of course, you know, I'm sure you're aware of the signatures gathered to do that and put it on the ballot. Well, we were more than capable of getting enough signatures to do it, and we did. And Secretary of State accepted that, so it was going on the November ballot. It said right on the petitions that this was going to be for the general election. And of course, the governor did not want on the general election in November. She did not want her name next to a ballot measure that said, you know, this tax was raised, and you know they wanted to take that off, so she stood a chance of getting reelected. So they brought forth Senate Bill 1599, which was a bill that moved that to May, to the primary election, and they want to get it out of their hair. So we have been fighting really hard because constitutionally we feel that measure, because it was, you know, specifically pointed to the general election in November, that it should go to the November election in November. Well, the Democrats in the House and the Senate started as a Senate bill, so it started in the Senate, passed unanimously out of the Senate, and went to the House to basically move it to May. Frankly, some of us left the building during that vote. It was that important to us to stop it because we feel it was unconstitutional. And it wouldn't have mattered. It was baked in. There were some Democrats that voted no, but they made sure they had coverage for the folks that were in what they would call swing districts where they felt like they might not have a safe seat. So they, you know, they voted no, and then the rest of the Democrats covered for them, and the bill passed. So immediately after, we are pursuing a lawsuit against them, against the state, because the Secretary of State, Tobias Reed, had said earlier that the deadline for this bill that had to be passed so that it can make the voter's pamphlet, and there's lots of intricacies around that, it had to be done by the 25th. And it clearly wasn't done by the 25th, but right the night before it was voted on, the weekend before, he decided to change the rules and move the goalposts and said, well, if it's not done by the 25th, we'll make exceptions, and people might get their voter's pamphlet late, or, you know, they may not be able to put their comments in the voter's pamphlet, but we're going to make the exception. That is unconstitutional, and by statute, it's against the law. But yet the Democrats went ahead and did it with the legislature anyway. So that's where we're at right now. The lawsuit we filed yesterday, we should be hearing back something because of the nature of the timeline. I would expect we'll hear something back from the courts probably by this afternoon, if not by tomorrow.
So at this point, given the timing aspects here, what do you think about the lawsuit? Do you think it has a potential given the time frame?
Well, you know, it's tough in Oregon because in Oregon, you know, you have judges that are frankly liberal, and you know, they're going to side with the governor whenever they can by law. But if something is actually unconstitutional, breaking the law, then you know they should side with an injunction, which would stop the whole thing, slow it down to the point where it will miss the deadlines. And when people don't understand the deadlines, I mean, you have to send off the ballots to our servicemen and women overseas. Those voters' pamphlets and those ballots go out significantly earlier than May. There is a deadline, and I wish I could tell you what the date was, but I think it's March. I think it's like toward the end of March 25th. And if those don't make it out, then they don't have the ability to vote. And so, I mean, it's just one of those things where an injunction or a stop on it would push it past the deadline. And it needs to happen, frankly. It's, you know, we feel it's unconstitutional. I mean, people signed a petition, and they signed the petition with their voice to be heard. 250,000 people signed that petition. And it was actually, it was significantly more than that. We turned in 250,000 signatures, and, you know, we feel like their voice should be heard on the general election.
And as you've been watching all of this, as you talk maybe sometimes to some of the Democrats, are they as supportive as the governor is of pushing this, or are they following along based kind of on their instructions?
Well, Kyle, I'll tell you some insight on how politics works in Salem. The politics of Salem is in the power is in the majority party, and the majority party in both the House and Senate, and of course the executive branch, are all within the Democrats. They reign. I mean, they are the powerful one. So what happens is you have a lot of Democrats that are moderate, and they do not think it's appropriate to move this, but they are afraid to take that vote because they know if they take that vote, the governor, and I've seen it happen, I mean, she rules with an iron fist, she will make sure they are primary. In fact, we have a couple of moderate Democrats right now that are both getting primary. You know, one of them being Daniel Wynn. He's our chair of economic development and small business. The guy's a brilliant business owner, and frankly, even though he's a Democrat, he's quite concerned about business in Oregon. And he hasn't voted the way the governor, you know, hasn't heard the bills the governor wants to hear. So amazingly, right out of left field comes a union challenger that was, you know, of course, is supported now by the, you know, the majority party and the governor herself. And we also have another senator that is fairly moderate as well. You know, this is what happens when you're in a majority party that's been in power for so many years. You end up with people that you're going to carry the torch. You're going to carry the idealism that they want you to carry. And if you don't, they make sure that they get rid of you. And that's where we're at. So, yes, to answer your question, I'd say there's probably at least 7 Democrats that would really like to have voted no on this.
Now, let's talk about the tax disconnect bill, Senate Bill 1507, and kind of the implications for that for the average Oregonian.
Yeah, so the big, beautiful bill that the Trump administration passed in D.C., it gave permanent tax breaks to the middle class. I realize people say that, you know, they're only concerned about the billionaires. That's not true. The big, beautiful bill, H.R. 1, did lots of things. And one of the things it did was states are connected to the federal tax, so states would not be able to charge taxes on overtime and taxes on tips. That was part of it. Also, another biggie, and probably the biggest one, was for a lot of folks, is it gave you the ability to write your interest rate off on your car loan. And the governor, along with the majority party, decided that there were too many tax breaks within this, and they just could not afford that. And it was about a $300 million hit to the state because of those taxes that the state wouldn't be able to collect because of the Trump administration's change. So the option for every state is to disconnect. And when they disconnect, then that means that the H.R. 1 doesn't apply, or at least portions of H.R. 1 doesn't apply to the state. And in this case, they did leave in the no tax on tips, no tax on overtime, and both of those obviously have limitations on them, but they left that in. But they amended out the ability to write off your interest on your car loan, which is amazing to me because if H.R. 1, the big, beautiful bill, had only been concerned about billionaires and millionaires, I don't know too many billionaires and millionaires that take out car loans. So what they do by taking this out, they really, really hurt those of us who, you know, don't have a lot of money and we want to go buy a car. And wouldn't it be great if you could write off that, you know, $5,000 of interest rate? Now, the other side, also, this disconnect took away businesses' ability to depreciate in the first year. So part of the H.R. 1 bill was to allow businesses to be able to buy a piece of equipment and depreciate it quicker, not have to wait over the 5 years or whatever the case would be, which means there's more money flowing in back from businesses back into the economy, which would have increased business activity in Oregon. So 1507, that's the number of the bill, took all those rights away. And again, we argued and argued and argued. And interestingly enough, the governor just put together her prosperity committee that's supposed to help find ways to help Oregon business thrive. Well, taking away that depreciation factor was probably the biggest hit that Oregon businesses has taken in years, frankly. And some businesses, because of the initial pass from the federal government, have already made those purchases. In fact, a lot of businesses have. They went out and made investments knowing they will be able to write those investments off. But now they're not going to be able to do that because of this bill. So essentially what this bill is a tax increase that doesn't require 36 votes to to pass it, and it did pass, and it passed on party lines. And again, another one that we are going to refer. Representative Ed Deal, who's also running for governor, just made a mention. He made a mention on the House floor, and he also made mention yesterday we are going to refer this to the voters as well. So we'll be looking to collect signatures to do that, to refer it to back to the ballot. And I'm sure if it hits the ballot, people will it'll vote it down.
So in the final few days of Salem, because you've got to be out by Sunday, what is left?
Well, we're hearing a lot of bills that we passed in the House, you know, over the last couple few weeks, and we sent them over to the Senate. Some of those bills come back. The Senate will modify them. They'll come back for concurrence in the House. So there's a lot of that going on right now. There also are some bills. We still have some controversial bills left to go. Of course, campaign finance is a big deal. 4018 with the Dash 8, they're pushing to approve the 4018 with the Dash 8, which is probably going to pass. The campaign finance issue in Oregon was something we passed in the last long session, and it left a lot of problems on the table. We had to pass something because the people of Oregon demanded it, but it didn't really give a pathway for the Secretary of State to be able to manage the new rules. So the 4018 with the Dash 8 gives the Secretary a pathway to be able to instigate and manage the new rules, which is going to require an entire new system, online system, so they can manage the dollars that we all take in for our campaign funds and the dollars that we spend. So it's very complicated. It's extremely complicated, but I think we'll be voting on that probably tomorrow. I think it comes out of committee today. So that's a big one. And there's just some other ones that are, there was I can't remember the bill number. I think it's 4014 or 4031. There was a bill that was a study for sales tax, and we fought that one really hard, too. 4014. The Democrats introduced a bill that would have made a study bill to study adding a sales tax to Oregon so that we can have our services back. And when I say sales tax, they didn't say they're going to take away the income tax. They said they're going to add a sales tax on top of everything else. So, short session is not meant for these kind of problems, but these are the things that we've been dealing with. So, I'll be glad when the weekend's here and we can't do any more damage to the Oregon folks.
Oregonians have historically, for decades, rejected a sales tax. It goes back, I don't know, as long as I can remember, periodically the idea comes up, sometimes from one side of the aisle, sometimes from the other, and it has just not gotten anywhere, and it's a bit of a surprise to see, in some ways, to see it pop up again.
Yeah, I know. It's a study bill, and that's how they justify it. So they're passing it. They're passing a law. Well, they did yesterday. They passed a bill to allow a study of what it would take in Oregon to justify a sales tax. And rest assured, they're going to do everything they can to go right over the top of people. Now, why they would do something like this in an election year, that shows how arrogant the majority party is right now. They just think they own the state and they can do whatever they want. And frankly, they do. They do own the state. They've got the governor, they've got the Senate, they've got the House, and the majority of the not just the executive branch, but also the legislative branch, the judges. They have complete control of the state. And they feel that they need to collect more tax money. And frankly, a lot of this is coming from the fact that the federal government is cutting us off because our governor won't work with them. And our budget's $140 billion. $38 billion of those 140 come from our federal government. So they have to find a way to get that tax money back. And this is how they plan on doing it. They're just going to tax all of us a little bit more. So it's a little scary. It's concerning. It's aggravating. And, frankly, I don't really care if you're a Democrat or Republican. I don't think any of us want to pay more taxes. And I think we all pay our fair share. At least I know I do.
As we look towards the primary and then ultimately the general election, Do you see some, especially given how this session has gone, and maybe especially looking more towards the fall, the potential for some GOP gains?
Well, I would hope so. Kyle, I think right now the governor's office is really in play. I saw yesterday that one of the largest unions in the state has refused to endorse the governor. So I think she's in a little bit of trouble. She's definitely in some hot water. I think that the Republican Party, you know, could make some hay with this if they keep up. You know, we're never going to elect in this state a radical right legislature. It's just not going to happen because, you know, the state's not geared that way. So obviously there's some districts that are very red. I think those districts are very safe, and they're going to stay red, just like the blue districts. But there are about, oh, I don't know, there's probably four or five seats that are in play, one of them being the one up in Tillamook with Cyrus Javidi, who changed parties in the middle of the last session. So I think that's definitely in play. We've got a good candidate there. Of course, Boomer Wright's in Reedsport. His district is pretty safe, but we have a great candidate in Claire Lynn that's running over there. I think she'll win that seat, and she'll do a great job. There was Tracy Kramer's seat, who was taken from up here in the northwest part of, I think, just out of Salem. Her seat was taken by a Democrat who was backed by the union in the last election, and that seat is very much in play. That seat was only won by about 138 votes, so I think that seat's in play. And there's a few others that I think that there's a good chance we could win. We might be able to flip three seats. All we have to do is flip a couple, and they won't be able to shove any taxes down our throat, because it takes 36 votes to win a tax. And I tell you, if the people of Oregon understood that, we would do everything we could just to make sure, if we're going to be in the minority party, not to be in the super minority.
You know, you mentioned something a minute ago that I was going to get to at some point here. Christine Drazen told us about this yesterday, the Oregon Education Association declining to endorse the governor for reelection. What happens between now and the fall? Lots of things could happen, and that could shift a bit. That was a major source of financing and support on a lot of levels for the governor. And I was even somewhat surprised to see that, and Christine Drazen mentioned it, that she was also invited to speak to that group as well. Now, obviously, they didn't give her an endorsement, but they did bring her to the table. What does that tell you about what's going on?
Well, I think in not just the data, at SEIU, that union, as well as AFL-CIO and some of the other unions in the state, I think they're getting to the point where they're not seeing, you know, businesses are not thriving, and union folks work for businesses. They're tradesmen and women. They don't make money when there's no construction happening, and they don't make money when there's nothing going on. The only unions that are relatively safe are those unions that are financed mostly through the state, which would be the healthcare unions and some of those, because those jobs are financed through the state. But when you talk about the rest of the union world, a lot of those folks are not happy with their leadership, because their leadership has continued to support for literally 40 years. They've continued to support the majority party, and it's gone downhill. They've not made any progress, and people are leaving the state. They can't work. They don't have jobs. They don't have insurance if they don't have jobs. They don't have training. There's things that are not happening. And the governor seems to be laser focused on things like DEI. She's more concerned about that type of stuff than she is about bringing jobs to the state. I realize that she formed her prosperity committee, but the reality of the prosperity committee to say that we're going to try to make the state prosper and then bring a bill forward like 1507, which disconnects for all the tax breaks that the federal government has given us, is a complete the reversal of the whole idea. So I think the union, frankly, the union members have had enough. I just think they have. I think Oregon people have had enough. Now, whether or not they show up and vote, I don't know. I hope so.
A couple minutes left on Inside Douglas County. Live from Salem, State Representative Virgil Osborne mentioned that not a lot remains. So what's your forecast for which day both chambers get out?
Well, if I was a betting man, I'd say we'll be out of here by Friday night. Technically, we're not constitutionally, we don't have to be. We have to end by Sunday at midnight, I think it is. But I think we'll run out of things that are, and there's going to come a point where if a bad bill hasn't made it, we might just go ahead and say we're not going to stay around for that. So I think we'll be done by Friday night. That's my hope.
And what's ahead for you after that?
Well, I tell you, I'm booked solid for about the next 2 months. So the next thing I have coming up right after session, I'll be down at Grants Pass, actually, speaking at a Representative Yunker's event. He's got a town hall that myself and Representative Scarlatos will be speaking in on Tuesday, next Tuesday. And then on Thursday, I'll be back in Medford with Representative Scarlatos' kickoff. In between, we have Greatest of the Grape coming up this weekend, so I'll be at Greatest of the Grape, and I don't think I can see a foreseeable weekend in the next 10 that there's actually a time when I'm not doing something during the weekend and meeting all week long. So it's going to be a really busy interim.
And do you feel like as you go through all of this with everything you've had to say about what you haven't been happy about, do you feel like there have been some good things accomplished in this session?
We have done some good things, and by good things, a lot of it's been that we've killed some bad bills. I believe the gun bill is mostly neutered. That was good. That took a lot of work from the Senate. I got to give props to Senator Brock Smith. He was on the front lines on killing that bill, and I think they got it to the point where there's not much left in it. That it's for all intents, it may get through, but it's a dead bill. We did pass a bill today that is good for business in Oregon, the governor's 4084 bill, which actually gives some tax breaks and incentives for big business to come here. Whether or not big business is going to move here, I couldn't tell you, but at least we're moving in the right direction. And there's been other bills. There's been some bills that have been good for business. So it's not all bad, but I'd say 85% of what we passed has not done much to help the Oregon people.
All right, we're going to wrap up for now, and we'll talk to you next week. Kind of get your take once everything is done, live from Salem State Representative Virgil Osborne. Thanks for being on today.
Yeah, thank you, Kyle. I look forward to talking to you again.
1257 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Listen every weekday afternoon at 12:30 to stay connected with what's happening in your community. Today's interview will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it with others and let them know where they can hear it. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Stay connected with local news and information. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.